Authentic Wellness Radio.
Alrighty, friends, welcome back to the first episode of the new renamed Authentic Wellness Radio. Thank you so much for joining me. And I've got someone very special on the line, a good friend of mine, Carla Atherton, director of the Lotus Health Project. She's a writer and an editor, workshop instructor, functional diagnostic nutrition practitioner, which is one of the best kinds of nutrition practitioner out there, I believe. She's also a yoga instructor. She calls herself the Mama Bear, and she's the host of the upcoming Children's and Teens Wellness Summit. So, Carla, how are you going?
I am awesome. How are you, David?
I'm doing great, Carla. It's so good to have you on the show. And you know what? I really wanted to bring you in to talk about children's health today because there are a lot of people, yourself included, I try and do it as best as I possibly can, talking about how to get healthy. And that's something that everyone likes learning about. But there's always a little bit of a problem with sharing what we've learned with the people in our family or the people who are around us and getting them on board with our with what we're trying without being demanding or commanding or anything like that. So I thought I'd bring someone in who has been doing it herself for quite a while. And I thought, who better than you?
Awesome. Thank you. It's my favorite topic. So I'm so glad to be here to be able to talk about that.
You know what? I was thinking about this the other day as well. And I think this is one thing that if I was asked to speak about anything, I'd talk about this kind of stuff. So we should do a really good job today. Now, you're the host of the upcoming Children's and Teens Health Summit.
Yep.
What exactly is the difference in approach that we might take between sitting down and coaching or working with an adult to get them towards a health goal versus working with a child? I mean, I'm going to guess that they're not just exactly the same as us, but 20 years ago. What's the story there?
Well, it's so different, Dave. Children have different needs, right? I mean, children, they are kind of reliant on adults a little bit, you know, in their life, and they need some more guidance, and they are at a different developmental stage, mentally, physically, emotionally. Even their brains are developed in it, you know, at a different stage and a different developmental stage than us adults. They have a different perspective on life. Like, they don't have the same experience, which isn't a detriment. I mean, it's not that that's bad. Experience isn't always great. I mean, it just means that they have a different set of circumstances that they have been through in their lives. So they're going to look at the world differently. They're going to see things differently. They're going to experience those things differently. Like I said, with the brain, I mean, they do have this certain set of, circumstances and things that they're developing within their brain. So they're more of sort of like the ooga booga stage, you know. They're going to do like things that are a little more reactionary, but innovative at the same time, and aren't going to sit there and kind of like think about things and think things through. And that really affects everything that they are experiencing and relating to health, right? So, and different like subjects too, right? Like socially, kids are they're going to school, they're have, you know, these the peer pressure or like things going on, boys against the girls or boys kiss the girl, you know, all those things that we don't really kind of do anymore as adults. So we're just going to view life, and we're going to view our health, and we're going to view all those things differently. And with those different stages, for instance, like sexual health, that's going to be a totally different topic when you're dealing with children than when you're dealing with adults, right? They're just all those things combined make a child's experience of health and, you know, getting well and getting, healthy and feeling good just going to be so different than adults. And, you know, even if we go into things like protocol, for instance, like healing protocols, like they're going to be different for kids because you can't give kids certain things, let's say because of their physical development and that an adult might be able to handle, for instance, or, something that an adult might be able to handle, like, kind of really serious, and that they're going to have to, you know, take like handfuls of vitamins four times a day. And, you know, an adult may be able to be committed to doing something like that, but a child, like, you really have to approach that a lot differently for them. And some things may not even be as hard, you know, when you're a kid, because, you know, sometimes they heal faster, or sometimes they don't need that kind of focus. They just are kind of able to kind of live their lives and still go on and do these kind of healing protocols or things like that, that, you know, kind of get them feeling a little better or a little more, you know, on that road toward health. So in kids, I mean, like I was saying, they actually, I think they heal faster. They're a little closer to the source, you know, so they don't have a lot of that kind of old stuff that us adults kind of have to work through as much. So, you know, maybe in some ways you could say it's harder to work with kids, that, you know, you're trying to change lifestyle and stuff. And in a way, maybe it's easier because they don't have those things kind of burnt into their habits and their brains and the way they you know, there's a little bit more leeway there, and there's more, I don't know, I guess an opportunity for a little expression or an organic kind of acceptance of a new way of life, or even going back to what they already actually experience as what it means to be a healthy person. Because I think kids are a little more close to that. So that's my long answer for you.
I like long answers. That's cool. Now, can you put me, well, let's put myself in the situation of a child. If someone's coaching me as an adult, there are certain things that are just going to inspire and motivate me to want to change. And a lot of the times adults will actually tell us this kind of stuff. So it might be, I want to be able to tie my shoes when I'm 80. I want to be able to keep up with my kids. I don't want to die of a stroke. I want my skin to look normal so I don't have to wear makeup all the time to cover it up. I don't really think children care about any of that kind of stuff. I mean, that's not something you can't say to a child, well, you need to eat your vegetables because you'll regret it in 30 years' time if you don't. Like, that's not really that something that they're that interested in. So let's say if I'm in front of you and I'm a child and you're trying to inspire me or empower me towards achieving something greater with my health, what would you say to me?
That's such a good question. Because you know what, Dave? I don't know that there's one right answer. Because, I mean, okay, it works differently for a kid, for instance. In the first place. And so, you know, working with my own children is completely different than working with kids that I don't know, that like in that way, like that's part of my family. It's different than working with my nieces and nephews. It's different than, and it's not even really working, actually, the word that I'm trying to search for. It's more like communicating with them or connecting with them in that way so that they see me as someone who they can trust and go to really know that I have their best interests at heart, and they would actually kind of like some insight from me. So, you know, like I said, working with my kids, or it's completely different than working with other kids that, let's say, come to my workshops. So I teach creative writing and critical thought to kids, and I actually don't even teach it to them. I actually allow them to learn it through inspiring them and igniting fires is what I like to say that I do. And so when those kids come to those classes, and they come there because they want to know something, or they want to be able to think about something and have something to say about that. And I think that goes completely along with health as well. So, you know, you have a kid who comes and, you know, or your parent brings them and you say, okay, look, kiddo, what are these things that are, you know, what's bothering you, or what do you think that you'd like to improve on, and give them all that space and opportunity to tell you what they think, and then say, okay, you know, this is how, you know, from what I have observed and what you're telling me and with the things that I've learned, you know, what do you think about trying this? Or what do you think? And it's not even, like the motivator is more like, you know, you want to feel better. It's immediate, right? It's not like that long-term 30 years down the road, you're going to regret doing that. It's not like that. It's more like, okay, you feel kind of crappy today, or, you know, you like got these zits you really aren't really fond of, or, you know, you feel really kind of tired, or you're kind of grumpy, you know, like those things that those kids are really struggling with. You know, a lot of kids are dealing with obesity. Like you know, you've become an expert. You don't like to be called an expert. Learned a lot about obesity throughout your life and throughout your work, right? So those are sort of the things that kids, I think, speak to them. It's more immediate rather than long term. It's more like, it's not like they're going to think they're going to die from it, which could, depending on what their problem is. But they think like, today it sucks, tomorrow it sucks. It's more it's more immediate, and it's seeing things happen for them a little more quickly. And it's more like being motivated to actually feel good about themselves in the space that they're in right now, in that body that they're in right now. Yeah. Does that answer your question?
You definitely did.
All
Now,
right.
when it comes to the kind of situation that the health industry is in at the moment, it can feel like a bit of a tug of war between two different parties who are trying to influence people. And influence is something that I had to learn a lot about. I mean, I started health coaching when I was 19, talking to, people would come in the gym, they'd be bank executives or whatever, and I had to learn pretty quick how to, it sounds really weird, but like influence these people. So I had to get them on board with the fact that, yeah, I understand that your back hurts and we need to stretch it and whatever, but food's a big part of this. And I'm 19 telling someone who's 50 years old and a boss of a company, this is what you got to do. And I had to learn how to get people, I had to learn how to make people do that kind of stuff, which sounds like a weird word, but, I'm trying to do that to help them. Is the health industry a bit of a tug of war between people like yourself who are trying to help people and companies or food corporations who see children as a source of recurring income and they figure out the best ways to make their foods as addictive as possible and progress them from, maybe it's Nesquik, which is like some weird hot chocolatey kind of thing here, to the next thing, to the next thing, to maybe getting them addicted to their next coffee brand or whatever it might be, and just get them paying money to this company over their whole lifestyle. I feel like I'm rambling a little bit now, but do you feel like it's a tug of war between people who actually want to help and people who want to earn money off children?
Yes. Like that's definitive. It's a definitive yes. I would say, Dave, that I'm okay. I wouldn't classify myself as a conspiracy theorist, okay? But I will definitely say that I am one for a proponent of the truth and of of really understand. Like I said, I love working with critical thought and teaching young people how to think. Okay, so allowing to think, and give them the tools to say, look at something that's being advertised to you. What is the purpose of that advertisement? And what are you going to do with the information? Is it true? Is it not true? Does it work for you? Do you need it? Do you want it? Why do you want it? What have they done to make that product look like something that's good for you? Or what's it promising to do? Is it going to make you like, the Axe body spray with all the girls at your feet or whatever? But actually it's toxic and it messes with young boys' testosterone levels. I mean, so they need to be able to think. And so, yeah, for sure, advertising. Marketing directly markets to kids for all of these products that are on the shelves, and it is to make money. I mean, that's the bottom line. But the products that they sell, and there may be products that are being advertised that are good for you or that are healthy for you, and that I mean, every single product does need to be marketed because otherwise people don't know it exists. Same thing with your summit, my summit, what we do. We still need to let people know that it's there, and we still have to promise to deliver something that these people need, including children, right? So we're saying, okay, you want to know more about ADD, you want to know more about obesity, you want to know more about this and what you can do about it. And our promise to you is that you're going to be more empowered, you're going to be more inspired, your kids are going to be healthier. So we do make promises. The point is that sometimes the promises that, companies that are actually advertising products that are harmful to kids, are promising something that really you can't gain from what their product offers. And it really does prey on kids' desire to, have something good, that quick fix kind of mentality where it's like, well, it's going to be good now and I don't care about later. I'm going to be hyper. I'm going to be happy. I'm going to be wee, 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 and like, that cartoon character is really fun. I think that, I need that mom. I need that. So you have this whole like experience with your kids where it's like, not only health people in the health field that are having this tug of war, but parents with their kids. And they go to the grocery store and their kids are carrying on and crying and making a big stink and and acting in a way that's not even really necessarily characteristic for them, so it's not part of who they are. It's because of this kind of manipulation. And so I definitely say there's a huge tug of war there. And I think some advertising is and can be destructive and really alter people's decisions that they make, and maybe, you know, make those decisions, poor decisions for the health of their family. Because I'm telling you, Dave, I've been there in the grocery store when my kids are like not carrying on having a fit. I mean, they're much too old for that, but they're kind of like feeling sorry for themselves and they want this and they, you know, feel this need to have this certain thing. And I've given in many, many, many times just to get out of there, just be like, well, it's not that bad. It's just this once. But every time you do that, it's a trend. It becomes a habit. And it's like, that's just becomes, it creeps in as something that you continue to buy. So definitely advertising is to make money. Products are made to make money. They don't want to not make money. So I do. Yeah, there's definitely some manipulation happening there, especially when advertising is direct at kids.
Mm. One word you mentioned there was promise. Now,
yeah,
this sounds really sleazy the way that I'm saying it, but I've really had to learn what to say and how to get the message across to people to, you know, for example, get them to believe, hey, drinking water actually is going to help your headache or your skin or whatever. And
sure.
Have that kind of connection with people. And I look at the people like big soft drink companies or big fast food companies and the promises that they make. And I think they're sickeningly good at this. Like they've done a lot of work on how to figure this out. And I'm doing it to try and help people. They're doing it to try and earn money. So if we can't promise or, you know, talk to our children on the same kind of massively influential level that they can, how do we beat them?
Well, yeah, it's like part of, I think it's like beating them and joining them at the same time, becoming just as good at that, right? But because, you know, for the, you know, just not in a manipulative way, but just as an inform, I think people just need to be informed. And I honestly, I don't know that every single product that, you know, deems to be good for you or healthful is, for one thing, healthful. And there are many, many companies that are health food companies that are in it to make a buck as well. And so, and there are many products that are, you know, deemed to be healthful that aren't, and that are lying, you know, to people, or just kind of covering up a little bit of the truth. Okay. So, and then there are people, like you said, like you and I, who are trying to, you know, reach people. And, you know, I don't know if it's, it, like war terminology always has to come up, you know, win, get, you know, like it's like us against them. And it kind of feels like that, right? Because it does feel like, you know, how do you, your voice rise above all that clutter and that noise that's happening from the big company saying, no, this is good. This is better. This is easier. This is faster. You're a busy mom. You're a busy dad. We can make life easier for you. And so for us to speak louder than that and say, you know what, your life would be easier if you fed your kids well and took a little time and to make, because time, it takes time to make good decisions. It takes time to read labels. It takes time to make sure that, you know, this certain ingredient isn't in that food that your child is going to eat. It takes time to prepare food. And so making fast decisions and feeling rushed and pressured is just going to make us make bad decisions. So, you know, in a way, yeah, join them, you know, in that, learn from, you know, what people are listening to, I guess. And I don't know. I mean, if it's like, that we have to be maybe louder, and that might mean a larger force of people doing this kind of work, or really just repeating ourselves. Repetition is the key. And it seems like, oh, haven't I said this before? But honestly, like, how many people have we actually reached, you know, so far? It's like a small, tiny, teeny, tiny fraction of people that these big companies can reach. So it's just, it's, I think it's more like a grassroots movement. It's more like, you saying to that person, to say that person, to they say to that person, and it will spread like wildfire. I mean, like, look at Facebook. Man, who knew 10 years ago we would have this phenomenon called Facebook? I mean, heck, when I was doing my undergrad or even my graduate degree, I honestly didn't even, I hated email. Okay, email even. And I live on this computer. I don't live on the computer, but I work a lot from the computer. I gather a ton of information through the internet. And I don't mean like, you know, just like Wikipedia. I mean like, you know, research, and you can really gather a lot of things and ideas and empower yourself. So, but I think that's why I think that power, there's a lot of power in the internet and where we can share information. I think that's what it's going to take. I mean, you know, advertising, yeah, and like big companies, yeah, they've got a lot of power. And, you know, but I think that the more we keep talking about this, the less power they'll have.
Absolutely. Now, let's talk about it or this issue on a kind of more personal level. I really, really strongly believe that the worst thing that a parent can do for the health of their children is to run themselves and work themselves into the ground to fulfill this ideal or this concept of being a perfect parent.
Mm-hmm.
Where do you stand on that idea that parents need to, or the idea that parents need to put themselves first in order to show their children what it's like to be healthy?
Okay, well, you know how I know the answer to this? I mean, for myself, is because I have done exactly that. I have run myself into the ground. I have, you know, burnt myself out. I've burnt the candle at both ends. I've been self-sacrificing and stoic and all giving and all those things that we think are good. And honestly, I think they're some of it is actually maybe, you know, turning a blind eye to, you know, what our needs are. Part of it's thinking that we don't have any needs. Part of it is also a little bit selfish, believe it or not. I mean, it is because we want to look good. Like we want to, you know, we want to be the best parent we can be. And we want other people to see us that way. I mean, like for me, speaking for myself, I wanted to be the best parent. And if that meant, you know, looking, I mean, self-sacrificing, which I would do, and I would be happy, not happy to, but not begrudgingly do it. But at the same time, there's a payoff, right? There's a payoff to say, I've been the best parent I can because look, see, I'm totally like run to the ground, but my kids are all fed. I you know, I did all that I possibly could, but you know what? You didn't. I didn't do all I possibly could because I was not leading by example. And I was making sure that I wasn't going to be there for them in the future because I was killing myself. So that is not cool. And so for me, I think that self-care is number one. And your kid, I mean, you know, everybody says put on your own gas mask before you put on your kids, you know, if the plane's crashing. So, I mean, yeah, and that's become cliche, but it's just, it just couldn't be more true. And so to do that, I think takes a lot of gumption and courage to face all of those kind of weird baggage that we can have as parents, and to really love yourself. And because if your kids don't see you loving yourself, why would they love themselves? Why would they do that? So you need to lead. At least I knew that I needed to lead by example. I needed to say, okay, look, guys, I'm making this line. I'm drawing this boundary. I need this space and this time, because if I'm here all the time for you, I'm only half here. And if I take this time to myself, I can be there all the way for you. And also it teaches, I mean, when we do everything for our kids, we actually rob them of their own power. And so this I learned was just the most beautiful lesson I learned from my children going to a Montessori preschool, where, you know, everything was tiny. Everything was their size. Everything. I was sitting on this tiny little chair watching these kids do all this busy work, and they were working, and they were so empowered. And I thought, this one kid came up to me and said, "Would you like some tea?" And she was four. And I said, sure. And I'm like, you know, sort of like, yeah, cute little kid. And she's just going to pretend to pour me tea. Well, the kid went and made me tea. I just about crap my pants. Honestly, I've never, and that's when I go, I got it. I get it now. And so when we do these things for these kids, including health, making all the health decisions, we can guide, yes, but they need to have a part in their own health. When we can do that and we can show them and lead by example, then they are empowered. They see what we do and they do what we do. For instance, you know, making their own tea because they've seen it done, they've been taught, and they know, and they have the tools. So I think that those things, leading by example, allowing them to, you know, have a say in their own health and really engage in their own health. Those are the biggest things. And so, yeah, parents, I mean, with my experience, have to take care of themselves. They have to, or you will not be able to help anybody. You could be on the couch, you know, falling apart and not any good to anyone.
That's one huge thing that I learned about trying to inspire people to make changes in their lives, is that you cannot ever give someone something that you don't have. So that's something that I'll remember when I become a parent. You can't give your children's health unless you've got it yourself. I can't give my clients good advice on how to stop gluten or stop eating gluten until I've done it myself. I can't talk someone through going, you know, doing a detox program unless I really know. Like, I've tried, years and years ago, I tried and I sucked at it.
Yeah.
And then it just became a lot easier when I had that, you know, wisdom to give to people.
Well, it's true. It's so true. And it's so funny because I feel like I've been through the ringer with every single health problem. My kids have been. Every time they have something that's going on with them, I mirror that. And I'm like, why am I getting this too? Why is this happening to me? And I'm going, oh, it's so that I can help, so that I know what you have to do and what it takes and what it feels like to be there. Yeah,
exactly.
And how to get back out of it.
Yeah. Now, it's obviously something that's very difficult to do, to be a good parent and also take care of yourself at the same time. It's, you know, you can do it all on your own, but it's not necessarily something that you have to do. When it comes to a support network, what kind of attributes or characteristics should we be looking for in terms of the people that we actually want to keep close and that will have a positive influence on children and can support us, whether they be health experts or family or friends? And what kind of people should we be looking to run away from or not let our kids be around?
Okay. You know, I'm this question is really interesting because I actually don't think at all that anyone ever does it on their own. And I don't think they can. And even if they think they are, like, even if they think, man, I'm just doing this on my own. And, you know, and it's like this whole, because a lot of us do feel lonely in these journeys, and don't always feel that there's anybody else there. But I think really to help our families regain health or to maintain health, prevent ill health, I just don't think that we can do it on our own. And I also think that it's just part of the nature of being human. I mean, what's the point of being healthy if you're just like by yourself? I mean, you know, there's always community. I mean, there's a reason why we want to feel good, because we want to go out and we want to experience the world and we want to experience that with the people we love and the people around us and the people who support us. So, you know, I think that, you know, being healthy is all about community and support, you know, sharing information. And I think that, you know, yeah, we need to kind of get away from, I suppose, toxic people maybe. And I really hate to even label some people as toxic, even, because I think that anybody who is negative or has, you know, isn't very supportive of your efforts or, you know, can't help you out in any way, or, you know, kind of maybe even sabotages your effort, which can be in the form of friends or family or even doctors, some that don't believe in what you're doing, or maybe it questions their own values. It makes them afraid of that what I've been doing all along has been wrong. You know, like, just think of that. That's a big thing to feel responsible for, you know, as someone who's tried to help people all these years, right, throughout their career. So I think that, you know, though, like, yeah, so I kind of shy away from saying, you know, stay away from toxic people, because I think all these people have a reason for the way that they respond. And like you said, Dave, I mean, you know, you can only give what you have. So, and I've always, I like that you said that, because I say that a lot too. And I think that's really important in relationship as well.
Don't give me credit for that. I totally stole it.
But I must have as well.
It's not mine to possess then. So you can steal it off me, because.
Well, sure thing. Because, well, I mean, there's not really an original idea, but that's just another philosophical issue we could talk about another time. But really, like, I think that, you know, but so those people and those groups, I mean, I actually had someone tell me, That she was part of a group for people who had this condition that was really difficult to deal with, and that a lot of them weren't leaving the house. They had surgeries, they had scarring, they had like all these horrible things. And they were actually saying that if she read a certain book, they would kick her off the group because they didn't believe that you could heal from this condition. And this book advocated and actually, proposed that, yeah, you can. So stuff like that. I mean, we can understand that people who we can consider toxic or groups that we could consider negative or holding you back from actually exploring your own ideas and your own thoughts about your own health. We can say, we can understand them, right? And say, okay, these people are coming from a place of fear or maybe ignorance, and not in a negative way. I mean, I'm not being rude by saying ignorant, but I mean just a place where they just don't know and or don't believe. And so, that could be easily when we have this little budding flower we call like, health, sometimes it's not strong enough to really weather that storm. So we might have to distance ourselves a little bit about from people who can be considered a little bit toxic or negative or limiting or sabotaging. But then, moving, I would like to think of it as more as a moving toward communities that are supportive, that are that allow you to explore your own ideas and thoughts without, giving you information, but giving you space as well, because everybody's journey is different, and we all have to figure out what that is for us. And it might not even be the right decision at the time. And somebody might say, "Hey, be dee dee dee, don't do that, don't do that, put that piece of bread down," right? But we might just eat it because that might be where we're at, and then we have to trust that that's just where we're at, and then next time we can revisit that. So, people who will give you that space to do that, but still at the same time care enough to say, you know what, guess what I heard, or I read this article, or this is the research I've done, and be able to have a conversation, a respectful conversation about that. So also, people who can lend you respite. And I mean, we're talking about parents here, and sometimes we just need a bloody break. Okay. Let's just like sometimes we just need someone we can trust and that we know will care for our kids in the way that we would to just step in and say, you go and take a break, and I'm here. And that actually can be something that's hard to do. I say we're never alone, or we can't do it alone. But sometimes we have very limited choices, and I completely recognize that. And so that might take a little more effort to find people that can, that for one thing, they understand where you're coming from and what you need to do. Because sometimes that isn't understood, and then it's like, well, it's not a big deal. We can do that just this once, mom's not home, kind of stuff. That's not great. So I mean, if you can find some kind of support that is respectful of your wishes, and maybe they don't quite understand, but they'll respect. I think that's really important. And also the last thing I want to mention about that are mentors. So I think like for ourselves, mentors for ourselves, in how to handle certain situations or health issues with our families or like people who are doing it, and that we can say, oh, okay, I can learn from that. I don't have to do it exactly like that, and I don't have to be perfect, but I can learn a little bit and shift a little bit of that energy in our home, or something like that. And also mentors for our kids, because there are so many people in the world that are so valuable, and that so they can just our kids might really, they might, what they say and what they do might really resonate for our kids in a way that we just don't sometimes. Sometimes mom and dad are just mom and dad, and they don't know anything, right? And it can be a real struggle in the home. So I think mentors for those kids are so good, like coaches, getting them out on like different teams, or some teachers are really excellent. And it doesn't just mean in school, it means like in art classes that you find in a leisure guide, or a swim team, or like a private dance coach, or something, or their auntie. I do little dates with my niece and sometimes my nephew, and they're so awesome. And just because I'm not their mom and I have a different relationship with them, and something different to share with those kids about their health and about their mental wellness and about how, what makes them happy or a change or some kind of joy, in their life. And they bring that to me too. So I think that, all of those things have to do with community, and they are all extremely important to health. And there are just so many studies being done about that kind of idea as well. Like, just people say, okay, well, this one group of people, they ate terribly, they ate really fatty food, they did that, but they had this sense of community and they never got sick. And that does happen. I mean, I'm not saying go eat a bunch of junk and feed your kids junk as long as you're dead of a storm and being happy. But no, but I'm saying that that's a huge, huge part of health, and I think it's essential.
I like that last point you made about mentors, and it's a good thing to get social proof like that. And again, this is one of those words or one of those terms that you use when you're talking about influence, which sounds really dirty, but it's not. I
No.
remember when I was in school, my favorite teacher was called Alan Marsden, and he was my business studies teacher, and business studies was my favorite thing in the world. And I thought he was the best guy ever because he was a genius at it, and he knew my dad quite well. And I didn't want to hear any of this kind of business studies stuff from my dad. I didn't want to know
Nope.
anything about it. I didn't want my dad to tell you. And one day I said, Marzi, I used to call him Marzi, which he hated. Marzi, what do you think about this? And he said, oh, if I wanted to give you a really good answer on that, I'd probably call your dad and ask him because he'd know better than me. And I was like, huh. My dad would never have told him to say that. That was just what he thought. And I thought, well, maybe my dad really knows what he's talking about here. So I agree with you. That's a good thing to have social proof there. Now, let's get a little bit controversial here. And
Sure.
we live in a world where allopathic doctors, so what you would call kind of your traditional GP or whatever, they run the medical community. And if I'm blunt, they've had control for over 100 years and they've screwed it up pretty badly. I mean, we've got more diabetes, we've got more obesity, we've got more children dying now than ever before. Alzheimer's is now a thing thanks to them. In every KPI that we could possibly give them, they've failed. And they own the medical industry. And of course, now I've got to say, nothing I say should be taken as medical advice. It's all purely for entertainment. No one should ever listen to me because I'm not a medical doctor. But they've had control. And people like yourself, who are holistic health practitioners, are like alternative, which is another word for just saying inferior in their minds. Why is holistic health better than the allopathic model?
Oh, interesting question. Okay, so first, I just think we need to have better terminology. Alternative needs to change to something. So we should rename that, Dave, but I'm not feeling all that creative at this moment to have a new name for alternative medicine. So
I would go with
let's
just
keep on that.
medicine.
Medicine, period. Okay, because medicine. Yeah. Okay. So we'll define medicine as all sorts of ways of healing, treating, preventing, all that stuff to re relating to health and wellness. Okay. Or illness too, I guess, for that matter. Okay. So first thing, I mean, I have been all over this debate, and I listen to a lot of stuff about it. I just think about it quite a bit. I've been in the middle of some really I can't even tell you how stressful it has been to have children who have been chronically ill. And it's been about 3.5 years since my middle daughter was diagnosed with type 1 diabetes, which we have been through the ringer with a lot of how I, okay, so we go into the doctor's office and I come out feeling about 2 inches high, okay? And I will not knock allopathic doctors because I have to say that many of them are good at what they do, but they're not in the business of healing or prevention,
If I
right?
get
Like,
in a, if I have something terrible happen to me, like a bus crashes into my face or I fall out of a helicopter, I don't want to see a homeopath, I want to see a surgeon. So I agree with you
that's
there.
exactly right. Exactly right. So we want to go do that when, my daughter was diagnosed. We needed, immediate care to get her blood sugar down because she was not making insulin. Okay. So yeah, there's a place and a time for allopathic medicine. But there are many, and there are many of them who actually are starting to twig onto this whole idea of holistic health. They want to do a lot more than patch and send on the way. They want to be able to help their patients with things like, you know, getting better with chronic illness, with, you know, maybe moving to a more holistic approach, maybe moving to some more natural remedies, maybe even prevention. So some of them are trained in, you know, as functional medicine doctors, they're trained in lifestyle practices that heal and prevent, like nutrition and stress relief. So, but they have to go outside of that allopathic training, you know, which is purported to be largely funded by pharmaceutical companies, right? So, you know, their training already starts with this whole kind of mentality that we need to throw drugs at things and that our bodies really are dysfunctional and we can't heal ourselves. We need some other outside force to do that. So it's kind of like, yeah, moving away from the wisdom of our bodies. But, you know, and so I think that, yeah, doctors, allopathic doctors do run the medical community, but you know, I don't see it necessarily as a conspiracy, just that the medical doctors are like considered the medical community right now, right? So, you know, but they do not run what I see as a healthcare revolution that we're seeing. You know, it's kind of like in the beginning stages right now, where it's like people are starting to wake up to the idea. And like I was mentioning earlier in this interview, like through the power of the internet and like information is everywhere. People can find out anything, but they do have to sift because there's a lot of crap out there. But you can find out anything and research anything and be your own best judge. It's just that people are starting to wake up to the fact that they need to start to do that for themselves and empower themselves. And so, you know, they can get the, you know, most cutting edge information, right? So, I actually think that people are less inclined now to think that their doctors have the end all be all answer, unless you're from a certain generation. You know, I mean, the generation before mine, I think that, you know, they were, and maybe even before that too, for sure. You know, like my grandmother, you know, thinking that what the doctor says goes, and if he says to take this pill, I take a pill. But I think people are changing, and I think that there are two things that kind of branch off from that. One of them is that we can get really confused and scared and know what the hell to do, because there's so many choices and we really need some guidance and some help synthesizing all that information. And then there's that other way, and actually maybe it comes from this one branch, you go through that fear, that you can actually get to the point where you feel a little more confident and regain the wisdom that we once had, because we're thinking being. We can deduce if something's working for us. We can tell if something's not. We can say, if we listen to our bodies and to our intuition and maybe to other people that are healers in our community, that are actually in it for you, you know, in it for health, in it to prevent illness, also to heal, not just to kind of pretend like it's not there or just kind of quick fix, like, you know, me a Tylenol and my headache will go away, but not really, you know, they want to know why that's happening in the first place, right? And I think that we once did that. I think we did. I think that this kind of whole medical model just kind of took over because we thought it was better and that it was faster, but we're finding now that it's not. And so, you know, there are all kinds of things cropping up, like, you know, functionally trained, like I said, doctors and practitioners of all kinds, like coaches, and, you know, there's peer support groups, there's Facebook groups, summits like yours and like mine, Dave, and, you know, that deliver information for people to assess and use and benefit from. So I think it's really important time right now. And there's a real shift happening. And I think that allopathy has its place, and so does, holistic medicine. And I think, yeah, we can classify the whole shebang as medicine. But maybe, you know, even further, because I would classify maybe what the first, and a lot of people do, as sick care. Have you heard that? And now we want to shift to health care, right? We want to make that shift. So I think that it's going to take just more people doing these things and waking up to the idea that we need to listen to our bodies. We need to return to some of that old wisdom and use every single resource we have, including medical doctors and specialists, all the way to people who understand that our bodies are a whole thing, and that can coach us through these things and help us synthesize. I think we need a team, actually, and that every single member of that team has a place.
That's a very diplomatic answer. I'm impressed with your with your restraint there.
I've never been accused of diplomacy in my life.
Well, you've done it now. You've right gone on. And done.
That was
and
one.
It's on the internet now as well, so you can't take it back.
It was on my bucket list. Okay.
There you go. Last question for you, Carla. What can children teach us about wellness, listening to our bodies, and actually being healthy?
Oh, so much. I think they can teach us more than anybody else. All that team I'm talking about, your kids will teach you more than any of those people. And I think, I mean, okay, so there are some things that, unless these kids have already been tainted by our adult kind of ideas, I think they just, like, if we watch them and listen to them, they know stuff that we have forgotten, that we have pushed under the rug, that we have, you know, unlearned and, you know, kind of like, I don't know, been kind of, I don't know if it's brainwashing or just like, you know, programming that happens in our society according to a lot of things that aren't actually true or that aren't relevant or that, you know, necessary. We're talking about advertising, like that can change. Advertising alone can change everything about how you feel about yourself. How is that for power? How is that? And that's actually kind of scary that your kids can watch some TV show and come away from there feeling like they suck and they're ugly and they're fat and they're unworthy because of something they saw on a TV show or something they advertisement that's just trying to sell them something. So, I mean,
to be fair, there are TV shows out there like Popeye. Popeye's a great TV show because Popeye eats spinach and then he turns into a Superman.
That's true.
And it's the stupidest thing, but it's like for kids, it's like, oh,
true. Amazing. Again, you can, you, I mean, oh, I don't know. I mean, it's all manipulation, I guess. But, I mean,
that's the
yeah.
good kind, not the bad kind. I mean, Popeye doesn't make money from people buying spinach.
No, but from people watching the show, they might. But I know. Okay, yeah, there are good messages. I'm not saying that, but for sure, the power of what we see as we grow older and that we're exposed to over and over and over again, us adults can really forget what it means to just be human and alive, healthy in a natural way, right? Because, like, you know, let's face it, like, I don't know how many things that you've gone through to improve your health, but man, I had a like huge cupboard full of supplements. Not saying supplements are bad, I still use them, I do, but you know, or like things I've tried, you know, it's like overthinking. So kids tend to keep it simple. You know, they tell me, keep it simple, stupid, like just keep it simple. What are you, and like they don't tend to overthink. You know, they don't sit there and, well, is this the right thing? And, you know, like kind of like frozen in that sort of decision-making mode. Or, you know, they play. How about that? Do you play?
Me?
Yeah.
Not with like blocks and stuff like that, but I consider a lot of the stuff that I do to be playful.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, good. Good on you. Because a lot of us adults, we do not play. And I mean, I tell you, I'm just as guilty as anybody else, and I need to play more. I mean, and that's joy. Like that's a healthful thing to do, and you don't have to think about it or schedule in, or, you know, and that's one thing we do all like quite often as adults, because we're trying to fit everything in. We've got all these people to take care of. And so we schedule in our play as well, you know, or our as sports, or, you know, and some of that's good, but we just really need to recognize that we need to pull back from that sometimes and just let it be what it's going to be. Let's play. And they naturally de-stress, right? Kids have a way of going, okay, I'm unplugging, I'm not doing this, or I want to go off for a walk, or I'm going to go in my room. I mean, they do have those tools. And yes, you know, I am a proponent of like teaching your children meditation practices and stuff like that. You know, I think that's wonderful. But I also think that kids tend to have more of those practices that we might not see as, you know, de-stressing. DE, not distress. I'm saying de-stress, like getting rid of the stress. I think kids do have some ways that they naturally will do that. They don't always do things they don't want to do. Okay? Like they
Children
don't.
never do stuff they want to do. They don't want to do. It's
I know.
awesome.
Isn't it awesome? Like, wouldn't you just love to say, I don't want to do that. I don't feel obligated. I don't have this responsibility. But we are also, like, as adults, we are supposed to have responsibility. We're supposed to. And I don't know. Maybe that's not so wise. You know, maybe sometimes if we don't want to do it, maybe we shouldn't have to. And I mean, I know I sound airy fairy, like, this is all philosophy and theory. But in practice, maybe. You know, that's something that we need to consider more often than not. I mean, I think that we sometimes we just need to, you know, like, okay, we need to feed this person who can't feed themselves because she's two. Okay, we might not really necessarily want at the time, but we need to. So, but it's like some of those things we don't. Some of those things we really don't need to do right at that time, at that moment, when we don't want to do it. And so they don't always overwork. Kids don't overwork unless they're forced to, right? But naturally, I have never seen a kid, well, unless they kind of, you know, get a little older and get in that kind of adult mindset, but naturally they're not going to overwork. They take a rest when they want. They're kind of like cats that way. You know? Cat, you ever see a cat overwork? No. It'll go get what it needs and then it's sleeping for 12 hours and then it's like, I think I'm hungry again. I'm going to go get some food, right? So they don't overwork and they eat when they're hungry, you know, because they're busy with life and they're more inclined to express themselves and live fully, right? They fear less and they love more, right? They fear less and they love more. That's what I learned from kids.
Wouldn't that be a nice place for everyone to be right now?
Yeah, I'd have to say.
Absolutely. Well, I can't thank you enough for sharing your wisdom here, Carla. I'm going to listen back to this one in a couple of years when I have kids of my own. But for everyone out there who's listening, you're running an event called the Children's and Teens Health Summit Part 2, which you can find at thechildrenshealthsummit.com. Just really quickly, what kind of things should parents expect to learn if they head over there to watch what you've done?
Oh, it's so awesome. I'm so, you know, I'm proud of it. I'm not proud of it because I put it together. I'm proud of it because of what every single speaker brings to this summit. It's just phenomenal. You've done your own summit, Dave, and I know, I'm sure that you agree that with an event like this, there's just no way that the host or one person can know all these things and can share them on their own, right? So again, it comes back to community. And so with all these speakers, people can just get a ton of information from each thing. And you know, I'm a summit junkie. And so this is why I want to start doing these summits because there's such a beautiful space and a place to share stuff, to have community, to feel like you're not alone. And to really empower yourself through education and information and you know, bring together, like, I don't know, hundreds of years of you know, insight and research and all that kind of stuff put into one space because of the cumulative effects of every single brilliant speaker that comes to the table. So we talk about things from everything from vaccines to sexual health, epigenetics to ADHD, autism, toxicity, oral health, like on and on and on. Like we have just an amazing amount of stuff. And even those things that, like the sleeper, you know, the sleeper talk, the one that you don't think you're gonna really get a lot from, listen, because every time you do, and I find this happens to me with every summit I attend, every time I do that, I learn something that I needed to know or wanted to know, and I had no idea I was going to find it there. So, yeah, so that's what we're doing September 14th to the 20th. Actually, it'd probably kind of like bleed into like the 23rd, but the major part of the meat of the event is from the 14th to the 20th.
Absolutely. And it's free, right?
It's free. So, yeah. To it from the 14th to the 20th, and you'll get, you know, four talks per day. And yeah, hope everybody really enjoys it.
Absolutely. So if you've got children, head over and have a look. I've seen the lineup. There are some legit experts out there. Of course, like Carla said, this is more than one person can ever share. So thechildrenshealthsummit.com is the website. Carla, thank you so much for joining me and sharing your wisdom as a parent today.
Thank you, Dave. It was a pleasure.
Take it easy.
Yeah.
Authentic Wellness Radio.